I just found out that you have to hit the record button twice or it doesn't record at all.
That is shocking.
That is shocking. Thank you very much. What do you think about it, sir?
Ow! Damn it! You son of a...
Another Thursday, another hour or so spent with PC Gamer and Company. This is episode 156 of our weekly podcast for November 13th, 2008. It was the night before Lich King, and in the bedroom of your house, your girlfriend sleeps cold, angry and alone. You are up late, clicking your mouse. Blizzard's second expansion for World of Warcraft released last evening without a hitch, and we were fortunate enough to have Alex Afranziana, Lich King's lead world designer, stop in for a brief interview. Before we tackle this week's pile of news, we're going to roll the tape from our chat with Alex last night, then we'll gather some impressions from our resident Azerothers, Josh and Andy.
This is Logan Decker of PC Gamer Magazine, and I'm joined today by Alex Afrasiabi, the lead world designer for Wrath of the Lich King.
Hello.
And this is on the eve of the launch of Wrath of the Lich King. Very exciting time, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
How long have you guys been working on this now? This culmination of how much effort?
Oh, over a year.
Holy frijoli.
Yeah.
A long time.
It's been a while.
All right. Well, there was a very heavy use of phasing in the Death Knight starting area throughout the beta.
Absolutely.
To give players a sense of real accomplishment as they progress through the quests. So how widespread is the use of phasing in Northrend, and how quickly will players get a chance to experience it once they arrive?
It's there. It's definitely not as widespread as in the Death Knight area.
Okay.
But you will see it. We're a little bit more hesitant to pull the trigger on that in the open world, just because of what phasing actually does, which is basically, if you're in a phase and somebody is not in a phase, they can't see you, they can't interact with you, and so that can cause some weirdness. So, but it is definitely there. It's mostly in Storm Peaks and Ice Crown.
Okay.
But you'll see it spread out. There's a few other instances of it.
Yeah, is there a sense of tentativeness about releasing phasing into the world, because it's such a... A new thing?
With great power, you know.
Yeah,
responsibility,
right?
So we have to be careful how we do it. You know, there's certain rules in place. No group quests in a phase, you know, phasing scenario. We don't want to strand somebody there, you know, 6 months down the line, and there aren't as many people in that one area, perhaps, and they need, you know, LFG, but nobody's there. That, you know.
Yeah.
So we don't want to do that. Yeah, definitely.
Great. And what applications of phasing do you hope to implement in the future?
I don't know if we've pushed it as far as we can yet. I think the Death Knight area actually had the most detailed use of phasing, whereas we actually phased out and in buildings and structures, which we've never done before. We've never actually really used phasing in this manner, actually. So, but yeah, I'm really not sure. It's one of those things that we'll just sit there and think of something and like, oh, phasing. We'll use that, and then bam.
That's the answer.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Seriously.
Then we'll begin to apply that in our lives. You know,
yeah.
So where would you say players should go right off the boat in Northrend if they want to focus on leveling their professions as soon as possible?
Oh, professions.
Yeah.
Either Borean Tundra or Howling Fjord, you're in good shape. I mean, they both have profession trainers for both factions. So you're ready to go. We've covered that.
Great.
Yeah.
When I first started asking a question, you took a breath because you were ready to slide into something. What were you about to say?
Oh, I just thought it was more generic.
Oh, okay. Sure.
That's all.
How often are new arena maps going to be introduced?
We have two. Well, actually, we have two that are already out.
Okay.
303. Although I don't know if Dalaran is. Orgrimmar definitely went out, though.
Okay.
I'm not really sure, but I think as often as... It kind of strikes us as needed.
Sure.
Like when we want to kind of, you know, get the arena game pumped up a little bit more and change the venues a little bit, we'll add them. They're fairly simple to make maps, but we do want to make great maps, obviously. Mm-hmm. So a lot of iteration goes into those as well.
Will the arena seasons function the same as in Burning Crusade?
I believe so.
Great. There's a lot of excitement, both positive and negative, about surrounding world events like the zombie invasion.
Mm-hmm.
How often does Blizzard want to orchestrate events like these that really kind of shake up the status quo?
So the zombie invasion was a very special event. We've been working on it for a very long time, several months actually. And we went in before we implemented a single thing knowing that it would have certain ramifications. There would be some backlash, and we knew that we would be, at least for a day, it was our estimate, a day to 2 days, but there would be some disruption in some players' lives. But because of the nature of the event, and it was a one-time thing, we kind of went full bore with it. Now, we definitely want to have more world events that are epic in that manner, but we do need to be careful about disrupting the player base, especially if it's a repeatable type of event. We want everyone to be able to kind of participate at their own leisure and have fun.
Sure.
Again, with the exception of the zombie plague, that was a little different.
Okay. So what are some of the preparations that you have to make for a launch of this size that players may not even see?
I just show up.
We're done.
Yeah.
Like, what happened, like, the week before behind the scenes, is it just absolutely crazy, or you pretty much put your stuff to bed and you just watch it roll out?
I'm like, done, like, 2 months ago. Their crunch time is, this is it. PR is working.
There's a lot of teams that work out, like, QA, and I mean, you guys still work on
the patches. Well, we're on call, though, so if anything comes up, it's like, all right, let's get in there and fix it. ASAP.
The 3 a.m. phone call.
It's a go, help.
So big events like a new expansion, a new major patch like 3.0, even a big world event, they consistently wreak havoc on servers, and they cause instability sometimes for weeks on end. Is this, on launch days, just a fact of life because you have such a huge and popular game? Or is there a sense of hope that the Lich King launch will somehow be different?
Well, if you remember the Burning Crusade launch, the actual launch went really smoothly.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I was pretty much in Outland, just bam, as soon as we were ready to go. And I'm hopeful. I remain hopeful that we'll have a launch that is smooth. Now, obviously, when so many players flock to a certain area or you know, a certain instance, it does sometimes cause problems. But hopefully, we're good. So I think we're okay.
Well, we've got a pool going about how many how fast you'll see the first level 80 players.
Okay. I won that pool last.
Did you?
By the way, I did.
Nice.
I did.
What's your prognostication this time?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have one now. That kind of, with all the changes to the classes, I'm not as sure about all the leveling hotspots, what they might even be. So I think I'm still going to stick with a mage of some kind, be the first, and like, I think it'll be really quick. So
Sunday?
Two days.
Two days.
Won't sleep. That's what I had last time. It was 2 days. I hit it practically on the nose. Bam.
Wow. Did that? All right then. So that's you're on record. 2 days.
No.
A lot of players enjoy professions more than any other aspect of the game, I'd say. What plans does Blizzard have to keep professions fresh over time?
We're always examining and re-examining the professions and trade skills. To keep them fun and viable in terms of just gameplay. Early on in WoW's history, professions weren't as fleshed out or cool. So you ended up kind of getting these professions and not really using a lot of the stuff that you had available to you. And we really want, like, going forward, for professions to be viable at, you know, all levels and phases going up. And so we're definitely not afraid to go back and continue to kind of revamp them and rework them and make them more awesome, more fun, you know. So and there's always the possibility of adding new professions. I mean, we just added Inscription for Lich King for 3.0. So the future holds, there's several options, and hopefully we'll hit them. Yeah.
Final word on what the epic flyer is going to cost in the expansion. Still 5K?
Oh, the normal epic?
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
But you're making money faster.
So. Yeah. I'm not saying it's not a great deal.
Yeah, it is a great deal.
The storyline that players have progressed through in World of Warcraft have seen most of the universe's main villains, you know, meet their grisly demise, as villains will do, with Arthas next on the list. Is there a concern that the lore will run dry at some point without new major catastrophes or world-changing events?
Yeah, I don't think so. It's interesting. I've been asked this question a bit, and so here's the thing, though, right? So with villains and heroes, they don't just appear, right? Mm-hmm. They're actually built up. And I think a lot of players kind of forget that, you know, your hero today was just a nobody 2 years ago, three years ago. And so we definitely try for every villain or hero that we slay mercilessly, we hope that we've kind of planted the seeds of another budding hero or villain. And when they do pop up, it's not a big, whoa, where'd this guy come from? But, oh, this guy. Mm-hmm. Can't believe, you know, just so
sure,
kind
yeah.
of. So we're continuously trying to kind of work on that. Now, the argument could be made that we're killing off all the classic RTS heroes and villains, but even then, I mean, and I've said this before, and the Lich King is a good example of this. Well, while we might kill Arthas, I don't think we're going to kill the Lich King.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a different. He's got a destiny to fulfill. We'll see how that goes.
That's actually very disconcerting because we've got Josh Augustine, our intern, in here, and I'm now wondering if, you know, he's going to rise up someday and step in the back and become the big villain here at PC Gamer and
maybe so.
Take over.
See, that's how it works, though.
Yeah, right? And then, you know what, in a year I could be out in the streets eating cat food. So that is...
With the squirrels,
these are things, yeah, this is something I learned from, you know, from playing games.
Yeah.
There's one question I get asked a lot from readers, you know, to bug you guys about is... they would love to be able to access armory information and check auction houses through their mobile phones or, you know, just when they're out there in the world. Is Blizzard still considering that? Or I know an iPhone application got taken down a little while ago. Are you considering developing your own?
I really don't have information.
Okay, sure.
Sounds cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Some people just don't want to let go. You know what I mean?
They're going to have their info with them at all times.
Yeah. Can we please cut out the middleman and just let players right-click any mages we run into and select free food, water, or anywhere we want?
Now, see, you're just not thinking of the mages' feelings, though.
No, we're not.
Right.
That's
right.
Guilty as charged. Guilty as charged. Right off the top of your head, who would win? Sand gnomes versus Murlocs. Gut reaction. I've got
sand
a gun to his head right now.
Sand gnomes don't exist.
Oh,
there's no such thing as sand gnomes.
Did you hear that, everyone?
The conspiracy continues.
I've never seen one personally. So
wow.
They may or may not. It's hard to say. So, mythical sand gnome versus Murloc is real. Murloc wins.
All right, that was certainly enlightening. Many thanks to Logan for sitting down with Alex to get some perspective on Lich King. I'm your podcast host, Evan Lottie, and I'm joined by reviews editor Dan Stapleton, by executive editor Logan Decker, by former PC Gamer EIC Gary Witta, by podcast producer Andy Bauman, and by Andy Salisbury and Josh Augustine. Conveniently, the last two are the two among us that are afflicted by MMOs, and we're curious what you guys' impressions are after... I know Andy Salisbury stayed up late playing Lich King. I don't know about...
I stayed up early, I think, is the technical term.
Early? Okay.
Very early.
So, I mean, what are your immediate impressions and what are you looking forward to after jumping into it?
Josh, you want to start or should I?
I'll go ahead and start it because I'm sure you have a lot more to say. I was kind of a disappointment to WoW fans everywhere. I only played for about 2 hours last night.
Oh, jeez.
I know.
Hang your head.
I know. I can't even, like, show myself in my guild channel. Everyone's just going to mock me. But I really liked it. I mean, the first impression is it was unbelievably stable. Like, I don't know if it was just my server, but... it was more stable than normal. There was no problems at all. There was maybe only two quests that were like overcrowded that you had to kind of fight for spawns. But they spaced out the quests so well that everyone was kind of in their own area. You didn't have a whole lot of overlap. There was no lag getting to Northrend or moving around. Didn't get disconnected once. The cities are really cool. They're interactive. They're engaging. A lot of new architecture is there, so it's not the same old inns and keeps that you've been looking at for, you know, the last 70 levels. I was a little unimpressed by the quests in Northrend. I don't know, after playing the Death Knight starting zone in beta, like, the quests there are so epic and so, like, revolutionary that I wanted the same in Northrend, and it felt like I was just doing Burning Crusade quests again. I wasn't very impressed. I mean, they're still really good, they're really fast, they're easy to complete, but I mean, you know, it lacked that spark that the Death Knight starting zone had. So yeah, I got a third of a level in 2 hours, and that's good.
Cool.
Yeah, as for me, I stayed up till 7 this morning, I kid you not, playing. I was fueled on a 5-hour energy, which, by the way, is probably one of the most disgusting things that you'll ever drink. But I had it left over from a LAN party, so I figured why not. And on top of what Josh said, you know, just servers being stable and everything like that, it was actually a lot of fun just to be able to go through what I had been doing kind of in beta, but this time with other players and stuff, and actually get experience that way. Because in beta, I had made it up to 73. So I actually haven't had a chance to see any content that I haven't yet before. But it's really fun to be out there with, you know, my guildies and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm just really excited to finally get going in this expansion. I've been looking forward to it for a long time. I've been logging in periodically over the last week, knowing full well the expansion was coming, and just being like, I think I'll just play some Left 4 Dead demo. I think I'm going to just put this down for a little bit.
Yeah, it's time to... one of my buddies, and he was saying he's been hibernating during the past week to save up sleep so he could stay up late over once Wrath of the Lich King came out.
Does that actually work?
Wow, no.
I don't know.
That does not work.
Yeah, he didn't last much longer than I did last night, so apparently not.
Has anybody on your servers?
Gary, did you get into it last night?
No, I've been very excited about it. I got my collector's edition in the mail the other day, courtesy of Blizzard. Thank you very much. And I went to the launch event last night in San Francisco at GameStop, where they had a very big to-do. They actually had a frozen throne that was carved out of ice that I got to sit on. It was very cold. And it was all very good. They had a dance contest and all this kind of cool stuff. The irony of it was, by the time I got home, the last thing I wanted to do was actually play the game. Quite tired and just kind of felt like all Warcrafted out. And also I was worried that it was going to be another one of these things where, you know, you wouldn't be able to log on. It was going to be a nightmare. But yeah, what I've heard is that it was actually very stable. And I think one of the very smart things that they did was the idea of having two different start zones. You know, you can choose to go to, I forget the name of the two zones, but, you know, you can go to one zone or the other. And I think that was a really smart move for spreading out the player base and ensuring that there wasn't quite as much you know, crowding and competition for mobs and things like that. So, yeah, they've done a really good job. I'm sure they've upgraded their server architecture as well, because I haven't heard a single problem from anyone about, you know, the experience last night, people jumping on and, you know, there being queues or any of that kind of hassle. So I think they've done a good job.
That's cool. It's funny that you guys mentioned stability, because they banned 350,000 people from Battle.net.
That didn't have anything to do. That didn't have anything to do with WoW. That was like StarCraft and Diablo stuff.
Right.
I think that was just a segue.
I'm just saying, I think it's funny that they might have to free up some space on their servers or something for that.
One of the nice little fringe benefits I think that they have from having such a huge player base is that they can be as ruthless as they want to be in terms of banning people. You know, if you've got maybe like, you know, 100,000 people playing your game, you know, every one of those $15 a month or however much it is, every one of those subscriptions is worth something to you. But when you've got 10 million players, or I think it's closer to 11 million now, you can happily ban, you know, 50,000 people and not care, you know? So I think that's kind of cool.
It's they can enforce their no shirts, no shoes, no service policy.
And too, they're really good if they wrongfully ban somebody. They're really good about, you know, reversing it. Like, one of the guys in my guild, I remember, was a... for the new achievements that just came out, there was one to get exalted with 15, I think, 15 factions or some number really high. And he was going through the old world and farming an instance that WoW players will know as Dire Maul, that farmers are famous for going for, at least at level 60, to get a book that would, you know, turn into a really good tanking sword back in normal World of Warcraft. And he was farming through there and he got banned. And he just went back and was like, "Hey guys, I'm definitely not, you know, logging in from China. Everything's cool." And they were like, "Oh, sorry, our bad."
It really is very cool just how, you know, each one of these expansions really feels like they kind of just inject a whole bunch of new enthusiasm into the game. You know, I certainly am one of, I'm sure, many people that haven't played for months, but now will be coming back and getting back into the game because, you know, I really want to get to 80. I love the idea of, you know, the Death Knight stuff sounds really, really cool. I'm creating a new guild, you know, for people to level up to 80 together. It's just awesome the way they kind of keep reinventing the game and bringing people back. The only thing I'm slightly disappointed about this time around, and I think they're missing out on a few potential resubscribers because of this. Unlike Burning Crusade, there really isn't anything for people who are, you know, under level 70. You know, at least with Burning Crusade, you know, they added a couple of new races and, you know, new start zones, and you could level up new characters. For this, there isn't anything like that. You know, you've got to have at least a level 55 character to create a Death Knight, and it's really just high-end stuff that they've added. That's great. I'm sure that's kind of the majority of their player base at this point is the high-end characters. But I know of at least a couple of people who have said, I'm not going to bother getting this expansion because I'm only like a level 20 or whatever, and there isn't really anything new for players of my level. So, you know, maybe it would have been nice to add a couple of things for noobs as well.
They'll get there eventually, though, and then they'll be glad, right?
Yeah.
I guess. It's just, you know, they're not bringing those people back into the game right now today. You know, if there been a new race or a new class or a new start zone for people to do something with lower ranked characters, they may have brought even more people back into the game. But if you're not level 70, there is literally nothing new for you in the game right now. So that's kind of a bummer, I guess.
One thing that surprised me when our copy showed up in the mail was that there was a sticker on the box saying it requires Burning Crusade, because
you can't level to 80 unless you've been to 70 first, and you need Burning Crusade to get to 70.
Right, but it just kind of struck me as surprising because, I mean...
Well, yeah, but I mean, how do you expect to get around it? I mean, if you... You know, the only alternative would be to take your level 60 character that hasn't leveled to 70 through Burning Crusade and go to Northrend, which is going to start hitting you with, you know, level 70 mobs. I mean, you wouldn't survive 5 minutes, so I don't know how they would get around that.
Right, that's a fair point. It just kind of took me by surprise because Blizzard does like to make their stuff super accessible, and by doing that, you lock out the people that haven't bought Burning Crusade. Suddenly, to play this, it's a higher price tag because you don't own that other expansion.
Well, I'm not sure.
Speaking of accessibility, the other thing that I think that they don't do so well right now is make it easy for new players basically to even install the game. Again, I know of a couple of people that have jumped into the game recently through the, they downloaded the client or they got a trial disc. And, you know, before you can even start playing the game, you're basically patching for pretty much, you know, the whole day. You know, you're almost going to leave the machine on overnight. And it makes me wonder why they don't upgrade their client. So whatever it is you're downloading or whatever trial CD you may have bought or if you buy the retail package, you know, they should be making sure that it's the most up-to-date version. Because I imagine there are some people that have said, I want to try World of Warcraft. But they spend 6 hours patching, and it's kind of a turn-off before they even, you know, get to sample the game.
Right. Now, guys, are you at your computer where you have everything installed now?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to get a copy a day early, so I was able to do all my installation and, you know, key authorization and all that stuff.
I'm just curious, before
the rush.
I'm just curious, how big is your World of Warcraft folder now?
You know what? I honestly have no idea. I mean, it's...
Go get properties on it, will we?
Well, I mean, you know, you've got the... You know, you basically got three game packages now. You know, the original game, plus all the content for Burning Crusade and Lich King. I don't think it's really all that much. It's not an incredibly heavy game.
Mine's,
I think each
mine's pulling in
like,
at 13.9 gigs.
Something like that.
Mine is exactly 13.92.
Yeah,
and that's kind of amazing because I think that's less than Conan took out. That was like 20 gigs.
Did you see, by the way, speaking of other MMOs, did you see that Amazon's deal of the day today is Warhammer Online half price?
Oh, really?
It's kind of perfect timing.
Yeah, and the other really sad thing was it's been this way for a few weeks at least, but there's you can get Tabula Rasa for $1.
Yeah, 99 cents. I heard that. And no, it was like 94, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's less than $1.
It's less than a double cheeseburger.
Yeah, that's a nice little smack in the face to poor Richard Garriott.
No, I mean, when did it come out? Is it not any good?
I think it was okay. I never actually played it myself. but I think it did all right.
I think it's difficult for any MMO stepping into what is basically now WoW's domain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, they've tried almost everything now. You know, Warhammer, Dungeons and Dragons, you know, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Conan. You know, Richard.
Tried Star Wars again, though.
You know, it's a brand name in himself. You know, and that game got a ton of publicity. They've thrown pretty much everything they can at Warcraft, and not even made a dent.
I mean, as much as it's difficult, though, WoW has built a base of people that enjoy these games that will buy them more. I mean, you look at the sales of Conan and of Warhammer, they've sold more than EverQuest did before WoW. That's at least an encouraging thing.
Dan, you made an interesting comment the other day when we were talking online. You said that you think Warcraft is killing PC gaming.
I didn't say that. I transposed it with your comment that Warcraft was keeping PC gaming alive.
I said that Warcraft is keeping PC gaming alive, and you said no, it's killing it.
Yeah, it's what we keep hearing from some developers, that they're worried that people are spending all their time on World of Warcraft and not buying other games. So I mean, if you can, and I was just talking to Josh about this at lunch, if you can get you know, all the hours of entertainment you want in a month out of World of Warcraft, why would you go and spend $50 on another game?
Well, doesn't it just behoove them to make games good enough that people will play them? I mean, you know, if another game comes out, I mean, I'm going to play Left 4 Dead because that's a great game. I'll take time away from Warcraft to do that. It's just that, you know, they've just got to make the good games.
Right, but I mean, it's like a new upstart drug trying to compete with crack. Everybody's already addicted to crack. You know, just getting them to try something else is twisting their arm, even if it's the best thing in the world. So you know, it does have kind of a stranglehold on a lot of people.
Are we going to play some Left 4 Acid? Is that what we're going to do?
that's the plan.
All right, well, we'll look forward to documenting everybody's collective addiction in the coming months. Do you know of anybody that's reached like 75 or anything yet?
Let's check. I see some people that are 72.
Is right now.
Yeah.
How long do you think it's going to take to hit 80?
There are a couple 73s. 80, honestly, with how people are playing, I give maybe a week and a half. Because, I mean, the levels are like 1.5 million experience, which is, you know, pretty hefty amount, even with how
let me ask you this. Does it take longer to get from 70 to 80 than it did from 60 to 70? Because 60 to 70, those last few levels, as much fun as the game is, it was just torture. You needed so much experience to get.
I didn't really think that. I thought that Outland was really, really extraordinarily well done as far as the questing and stuff, because there wasn't a single zone that I went into, and I thought, like, oh, this is just drudgery. Like, I don't want to be here. And they kept it so fresh and stuff that I've leveled two characters to 70, and both times it didn't seem that difficult. So I don't know. I think it was definitely longer from 60 to 70.
They did a good job. I actually got to level 70, and I never even went to the last zone. I finished in Netherstorm, and I can't remember the name of the last zone, but I never needed to go there. Yeah, I never needed to go there.
Yeah.
Now, I guess the question is, like, when Burning Crusade came out, they said it would take as long to go from 60 to 70 as it did to go from 1 to 60. So will it take as long to get from 70 to 80 as it did to get from 1 to 70?
I'm not sure about that, to be honest. I suppose it's kind of I'll have to, you know, wait and see myself, because I haven't read that anywhere. I remember they were pretty open about that when Burning Crusade was released. But, you know, as for Wrath of the Lich King, I really haven't seen a whole lot about that. But with the numbers I'm seeing, it wouldn't seem too far off, to be honest.
Well, the numbers are looking huge. I heard there were more pre-orders for Lich King than there were for Gears of War 2, which is obviously one of the biggest games of the holiday season.
Yeah, I'm in Podunk, little, you know, Gig Harbor, Washington, and there was a 45-minute line around the, like, little strip mall to the GameStop. Like, I was floored, and that in, like, the really small town that I live in, there was a line for Wrath of the Lich King.
Nice.
It's, you know, it's amazing, you know, when you play the game, you know, you're aware of the fact there's a lot of people in the world, and you get these, you know, press releases every 6 months or so, you know, World of Warcraft hits 10 million players, and you understand that, you know, kind of in the abstract, that lots and lots of people play this game. But it isn't until you go to, like, one of these launch events, like, you know, like last night, I was standing there just looking at all these people and the line going around the block, and you think, holy shit, this game is a phenomenon.
Yeah.
It really, really does bring it home to you.
Got Will Shatner doing commercials for it. It's got to be doing some, right?
Well, I don't think it's difficult to get him to do. I mean, you know, just check it or do whatever you want. I don't think it's that big a deal. But Yeah, I mean, it really is incredible. You've got, you know, people up. They had a dance contest last night. You've got people up on the stage, quite happy, to humiliate themselves, you know, for a chance at some World of Warcraft swag.
Have you seen the Warcraft retrospective on Game Trailers?
No.
Well, anybody that hasn't, I really suggest watching it. It's kind of cool that in the third episode of it that was just released a little while ago, they actually show like TV episodes and stuff that have referenced World of Warcraft. And there's a ton of stuff that I had no idea. Like, I knew about the South Park, but it's in like How I Met Your Mother and all sorts of other stuff. Like, it's pretty cool.
That's really cool. Yeah, can you post it in the comments store once this is posted?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's really a fun watch. It'll take probably like a half hour of your time for all three episodes, but they really did a top-notch job on just like... It's not all about World of Warcraft. It's just like how the game kind of got its start and everything. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the exact numbers either, but I don't know if you saw it recently that Activision Blizzard released some of their financials. And
oh, yeah, I saw that.
See the breakdown. It was clear that Warcraft is basically now, you know, responsible for like half of everything the company earns. It's nuts.
It's like half is WoW and half is Call of Duty at this point, it seems.
Well, that's why it's now Activision Blizzard and not Activision Vivendi.
I would have insisted on it being called Blizzard Activision.
Blizzard Activision, yeah.
Yeah, bloody right.
All right. Fantastic. Well, thanks for all that information, guys, and looking forward to hearing more about your experience in the game. As we're off the side, there was an interesting story in Wired this week. You may recall the German hacker in 2003 that apparently infiltrated Valve's network and posted some source code from Half-Life 2. It was like a really big story. You posted Half-Life 2 to torrent services, certain source code from it. Well, apparently there's some more details about that via Wire this week, that Valve had worked with the Seattle FBI to attempt this sort of gambit maneuver, so to speak, to trick the hacker, whose name is Axel Gembe, into accepting an offer for a job interview in Seattle so they could get around extraditing, which... is apparently illegal for Germans to extradite their own citizens. Anyway, Gabe Newell conducted a 40-man interview with a hacker and passed his resume along to the feds and invited Gembe back to Seattle for a follow-up interview, you know, and said that they would pay for all travel expenses and hotel and all that, but he didn't bite, apparently. And apparently this is a tactic that had worked for the FBI earlier in 2001 when they lured some Russian hackers with an interview under a fake company name. I just thought this was a interesting thing for Valve to do. It doesn't seem like they would go out of their way to really try to bring this person to justice, but it's kind
I
of...
I love that. Like a hacker sting. That's excellent.
I mean, this guy totally screwed them. I mean, he broke into their computer network. He stole their, you know, the code to their, you know, years in the making, you know, masterpiece of a game and put it out before people had a chance to buy it.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah,
that's
like a thing of principle, to be honest.
Yeah, if I were Gabe Newell, I'd be out for blood.
Yeah,
I agree. I just love the idea of him being like a f-ing vigilante, you know, sitting in his office all day plotting this out, like with a cape and cowl on his head or something. How can they get this guy in the U.S.? And it's just such a funny tactic to be that direct and actually talk with the guy over the phone that stole your stuff. You know, it's amazing.
So let that be a lesson to all of you out there. If Valve ever offers you a job, they just want to arrest you.
Yes, have a really cool sounding name like he did.
I'll bet you he'll be played in the movie by Angelina Jolie.
But it did say in that story that he had gotten busted for something else, and they're after him for like creating some kind of bot that was used in like a zombie DDoS attack.
What a dick!
Yeah.
He's a busy boy.
Those Germans.
Pardon my language.
Oh, you Germans. We love you.
Indeed. And speaking of hirings and firings, apparently Richard Garriott, returning from space, has decided, you know, had an epiphany probably while he's up there, to leave NCSoft, which, I mean, I don't really know if he was technically even working for the company for the months that he was training to go into space, if he was on their payroll even, but... It's worth noting, I guess.
He's one of the big names in the industry. Even though Tabula Rasa is can be had for less than a dollar, he's still he's still got some cachet.
Here's my question: do you think he and John Carmack are gonna like get in cahoots?
That's actually, I mean, I was just wondering because it didn't say in his statement when he posted that he was leaving. He just said you know, he'd been up to space, he achieved that goal, and now it sparked some other interests that he wanted to pursue. Doesn't say what those are. It's probably not game related. He doesn't say that though. But I'm guessing.
Imagine if it was. Holy crap! Can you imagine if it was game related?
Well, I mean that would be, you know, all well and good. But I mean,
space VR that's actually in space.
but yeah, I kind of doubt we'll be seeing any more games from Richard Garriott.
Yeah, doesn't his brother still work for NCSoft or something? Isn't that? I think that's how it works.
I don't know if he does anymore. He used to be the CEO of NCSoft America. I don't know if they.
That's right. Still is.
Don't know if he still is.
Yeah, when he went out to space, he didn't just go to like hang around. He had a ton of experiments he wanted to do too. I would not be surprised if he just got excited about like doing scientific research, and that's what he's going to be hiding himself in, like a crazy laboratory.
And that'd be cool.
Yeah, I think he's joined like the James Cameron / John Carmack club, where he just is not interested in doing his day job anymore, you know, and just wants to do other crazy stuff.
Well, he's got all the money he'll ever need, so he can do whatever he wants.
At the house that
he's going to be disappointed, though, that Tabula Rasa was not, like, you know, the next big thing, the way I'm sure he and many others at NCSoft hoped it would be.
Well, I mean, Who wants their game to flop, you know?
Yeah, and it hasn't flopped. I mean, it's still up and running. It's still probably making the money. Who knows if it's actually paid for itself yet, but they haven't shut it down. I mean, it's no Hellgate, we'll put it that way.
That's fair.
Maybe it's time for Ultima to make a comeback. I don't even know who owns the rights to that anymore, but
EA.
Like a really good old-fashioned single-player Ultima, I think, could still be like his ticket back into the big time if he wanted.
Yeah,
to
Yeah, you know what? I think that would be amazing. I mean, you'd get a whole new generation, plus everybody, you know, the whole nostalgia crowd, you know, who remembers how awesome those games were. And you just stay up at 3 a.m. all bleary-eyed.
The trick is actually making the game awesome, which few people
well,
have.
Well, there is that, but, you know, you just add the Awesomenator or whatever.
Yeah, just add awesome. There you go.
Yeah. Doesn't Microsoft's .net, isn't that what it's all about? You just put that in and it makes everything awesome or something?
Yeah, I think so. Or the newly revamped games for Windows.
That's it, yeah.
Live for Windows, right?
Makes your game awesome.
Indeed. Indeed, yeah. And along with that update that released yesterday, Chris Early from Microsoft sort of let some news loose that Games for Windows plans to distribute full games in the future and digitally, that it's on the roadmap, so to speak. And the only really detail that he mentioned about that was that Games for Windows plans to post paid downloadable content to the service, and that's apparently something that Steam does not do at the time. And also that this won't prevent publishers from essentially publishing games to both platforms necessarily, but let's see, how did he put it? He put it, to quote him, for instance, though Games for Windows Live exclusivity does not preclude the titles such as Fallout 3 from being sold on Steam, Fallout 3's DLC will only be available on Microsoft's Games for Windows Live marketplace. So I guess that kind of begs the question, what does Games for Windows need to do in order to compete with Steam? What can it even offer as a platform that Steam doesn't?
Well, I think the most important thing is to be able to go back in time to 2003 and launch it then. Yeah,
I mean, I was just playing around with this new interface last night, and I'll say this, it's sleek, it is not like the same like hack port of the Xbox experience that's been ported over to the PC. It's got its own interface. It looks much better. It runs a little bit better. It's you know, a little more responsive. It does not seem to have any new functionality, which is kind of a drag because, I mean, all that it does right now is keep track of your achievements and you can see when your friends are online. And, you know, you can see your profile and things like that. Which, you know, Steam does all that and way, way more. It's interesting. I mean, they've been saying for a while now that they're eventually going to get into the downloadable content thing, actually selling games on there. But
I've said it before, but I think it bears repeating. I think it's an embarrassment to Microsoft that Steam has so handily beat them at their own game.
Oh yeah,
especially when they've demonstrated that they can do it. You know, if you look at Xbox Live, that is a brilliant, brilliant service and a brilliant system. And they've just, you know, they're updating that as well. You know, next week there's a whole new facelift for Xbox Live coming up that's really, really good. So it amazes me that they just, you know, whatever mojo they have on the Xbox, they do not seem to be able to port it over to the PC.
Right, and they keep using the argument that, oh, Steam had 5 years to get where they are today. But Steam had the resources of an independent developer, whereas Games for Windows has the resources of the world's largest corporation and the benefit of learning from Steam's example. It doesn't really hold water to me. I mean, it's like they have the technology, they just don't want to put the resources towards it.
Yeah, that's a good argument, I think. I mean, just for me personally, as someone that can barely stand to have, you know, like an IM applet running with its friends list and then my Steam friends list, I do not want to, you know, game platforms running at the same time with different friends lists, different updates. It just, that kind of incongruity turns me off completely. And
yeah, exactly. And that's something you kind of feel on the console side as well. It's the same argument. You know, that I've got a PS3 and an Xbox, but you know, they're obviously separate friends lists. You know, they're not, you know, you can't all play the same game together. You know, if, let's say for example, I've got an online game like Burnout Paradise or something, and I want to play that, but I can't play it with my PS3. Friends, and that's annoying. And you know, the achievements and the trophies aren't compatible. It's irritating. And you see the exact same thing now on PC, where your efforts are kind of divided between, you know, achievements and friends lists on Steam and achievements and friends lists and things on Games for Windows. There needs to be kind of one service to rule them all.
It's even messier with Fallout 3 on Steam, for example, because I've got two friends lists running in the background at the same time. I've got my Games for Windows friends list going, and I've got my Steam friends list. So I'm getting pop-ups from, you know, this guy signed on, this guy signed on, and they're in different places on the screen when people sign on, and it's just kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that bugged me, and you know, this is an upgrade for Games for Windows, so it's better than it was a week ago. But the fact that I still can't upload my own profile picture, you know, I'm still locked into choosing, you know, one of the two dozen they've got on there. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you know, and whenever we do interviews with them and you know, we have these discussions, and you get that kind of same feeling from them every time. It's just kind of, they shrug. Oh, well, you know, we're still working on it, and this is great, and there's no, just zero passion, zero, you know, interest in, you know, we are gonna do something revolutionary.
They do promise big things. They say there's a bunch of big stuff coming down the pipe. They won't really talk about what that is or why it's better than what's already available for free.
But, you know, you ask them, why doesn't it do this, why doesn't it do that, and you just get a, eh, well, you know.
Like, well, we're still working on it.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel like it's just really as simple as they want to dedicate their resources to their console and not split their audience, so to speak?
Well, absolutely. It's that they want to dedicate a lot of resources to the console. I mean, that's where the money is.
The frustrating thing is it just feels like there's no end in sight as well, because, you know, clearly Steam is not going anywhere. It has established itself as the preeminent service. But, you know, Microsoft are not going to give, you know, it kind of feels like they should be the ones to be doing this stuff, because they've done so well with Xbox Live. You know, they've got that connectivity, and they are, you know, they're Microsoft. You expect them to be the guys that should be doing this. So they're going to be, you know, button heads for quite some time, I think. And, you know, it's like Blu-ray and HD DVD all over again. You know, only the consumers lose.
But, you know, maybe it's that they actually don't get PC gaming. I mean, that could be possible. The people that invented DirectX today do not get PC gaming in the same way that they kind of shrugged off the internet, you know, in the 90s. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's not our core business, and we're focusing on the OS and all that. And then all of a sudden, they're like, whoa, we missed this huge thing that was happening right under our noses, because we're this huge kind of slow-moving company. And right now, you know, they don't seem to be getting where all the excitement in PC gaming is, because they're so focused on Xbox, which is fine, but, you know, they need a core of people who get it, you know? And they just seem absolutely clueless.
I think that they do have people that get it. I think that the problem is that pretty much everything at Microsoft is done by committee. Mm-hmm. I mean, like all of their stuff, like the criticism you always hear about all the Microsoft design products is it's designed by committee, so there's no one vision guiding.
I don't think that's the problem though, because you've only got to look at Xbox Live to as proof that they can do it. The problem on the PC side is they can't monetize it the way they do on Xbox Live. Xbox Live, you know, they sell the hardware. They're probably making money on the hardware finally now. You know, they make money on every single Xbox game that's released, you know, whether it's theirs or someone else's, they take a percentage on that. And they can charge you $50 a year to play online. They can't do any of these things on the PC, so it's not worth the effort to them. I think it's as simple as that.
Yeah, they definitely prove that they can't charge us $50 a year for online gaming on the PC.
But you know what? I might have paid it if they had come out with the sort of cloud services that Steam has. But before Steam had introduced it, you know, if they had said, hey, we're going to offer this new service and here's what we're giving you for your money, I'd be like, totally, $50 a month to have my save games accessible anywhere in the world, you know, or any,
yeah,
I'd be like, no problem. But where were they? Who knows?
Yeah, and they launched with less features than Steam had and wanted you to pay for it. So that was craziness.
Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, it would have been interesting if instead of sort of migrating some of the Xbox technology over to games for Windows, if they would have, you know, 5-6 years ago, you know, sort of developed something like an avatar service, like a friend's service, into games for Windows, and then, you know, we'd see that port into Xbox. I think, you know, developing on the PC, especially a platform like Steam, like games for Windows, is an opportunity to test out that kind of bleeding edge technology and ideas. But
the other problem is because Xbox is kind of a closed architecture, a closed service that Microsoft entirely control, and they can dictate to you, here are exactly the things you need to do. Like, your game needs to work on Xbox Live, otherwise you just simply cannot put the game on our service. You can't release the game. They can't do that on PC. They added games for Windows as kind of an opt-in service, and they're trying to encourage people to you know, support it. And there's obviously, you know, inducements and things, but they can't, you know, mandate it the way they can on the Xbox. And that's the other problem, is that, you know, some games may work with it, other games may not. And they don't have the, you know, the 100% control that they have on a console system. So they, you know, there's a bunch of reasons why it's never going to work.
That's a good point.
If they had established themselves early on as like the online distribution powerhouse that they really should have been, they would have had that leverage. I mean, Steam could have done that. They could have said, hey, in order to get access to our huge customer base, you need to have these features. They don't seem to do that, which, you know, good for them. You know, because they've got the overlay, which works fine. But Microsoft could have done that, and similar to the way they've done it with the Games for Windows label on the boxes. Like, you want this identifiable branding on your box, you've got to conform to these specifications, and people are doing it. And the reason they didn't adopt Games for Windows by and large to begin with is because most developers knew that nobody would pay $50 a year for functionality that isn't as good as Steam.
You know, I feel like the campaign has gone negative here, so I want to put in something really positive, which is that the Belkin Cushtop laptop stand is really saving my NADs these days. It's fantastic. We put it in our gift guide last month, and it's this sort of cushiony lap. You know, I've tried using all these laptop, you know, lap protectors and nut shields, I call them, you know, because my Dell at home, my laptop is really, really hot, and I like to do stuff in bed, whatever. And
no comment.
I can't put it on my lap because it's so hot, you know. But this thing is really soft, and you just put it right in your lap, and you put the laptop on top of it. It doesn't slide around. It's not cold, you know, metallic or anything like that. And it's even got a little pocket, and I can stuff snacks in there. I love it. It's like $35 from Belkin.com. So I just want to share that because I think it's fantastic.
Now, the other thing we should say about Games for Windows is there is a desktop client coming. That's been one of my major gripes about it, is that I had to be in the game to see who's in the game, but that's not out yet. So should be soon, but it's not yet.
I mean, again, Steam's already doing it. Like, literally, as you were saying that, I got a couple of notifications from Steam, like, such and such a person is now playing Fallout 3 or whatever. Like, we already have it. It's just so funny to me that Valve got this right before Microsoft themselves did.
Long before.
And they're still getting it right long before Microsoft will, or ever will, maybe. You know, who knows?
And I tell you, the downloading thing as well is, again, it's funny to me that they're still only talking about this in the abstract, like, oh, you know, maybe at some point we'll be adding, you know, digital downloads. Again, Steam has been doing it right and doing it first for the longest time. It's got to the point now where we're going to the store to buy a game. That feels like old hat to me now. That's something I only do with console games.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I still like having the box. You know, I've got Fallout 3 on the PC, but you know, then you look at that, you know, like collector's edition lunchbox, and you know, you kind of want that too. I think that's what's going to have to happen, is they're going to have to make the physical version of the game, if they want to, you know, make retail versions of the game survive, is add more physical inducements, like more collector's editions and things, because otherwise people are just, why go to the store? I can have it right now.
So you think the only thing that's going to be on shelves in a few years is collector's editions, and everything else will be online?
Yeah, I mean, why not? I think that's a good way to do it. If you want the regular edition, you download it. But, you know, if you want the super special one, you got to go to the store to get it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that.
I still have my cloth map from Ultima 4.
What do you use
that? I've got my three Warcraft collector's editions here on my shelf, all kind of stacked up together, and they look awesome.
The sound of your voice.
It's just like a little library of awesome on my shelf here.
Takes up an entire shelf, but it's totally worth it.
Yeah, it's funny because when I wanted to install it on my MacBook, you know, in case I want to play when I'm on the road or whatever, and I had to go into my little walk-in closet, my storeroom where I like kind of keep all my shit, and had to get out, you know, the collector's editions, and it's like. These things weigh like half a ton, you know, all three of the collector's edition together. It was just ridiculous having to open them all up and like dig out the discs. But I love it. I love it. I love collector's edition. I think I can confidently predict that that is going to be the only way that retail games are going to survive on PC or in any format. Because if you want the vanilla version, again, who cares about the regular box? People don't want boxes anymore. But if you've got like some super, you know, special edition steel book, like that Fallout 3, is that a lunchbox, that collector's edition? I couldn't quite figure out what it was, but it looks really cool.
Yep. Now, the survival edition.
That's a game where I would go to the store to get that version rather than just download it.
Yeah.
The survival edition even came with a, you know, a plastic Pip-Boy clock thing. Although, I was kind of disappointed, I got to say, that the clock itself is kind of crappy. But, you know, I don't have it for the clock. I've got it. You know, I've got plenty of other clocks. It's just cool looking.
Yeah, we're certainly seeing some proliferation among the special editions. Didn't the Gears 2 game come with a Lancer, like a plastic Lancer?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing you're seeing now, like even multiple tiers of special editions. Well, there's only one limited edition version of Gears 2, but if you bought it from Amazon, they had an exclusive thing. This is, again, another thing that the retailers are increasingly doing to try and stay alive, which is exclusive things, be it like in-game content, like you might get an exclusive weapon or, you know, a free plastic thing that comes with the game, but only if you order it from them. You know, they do it with DVDs as well now. Like, you know, if you go like buy Iron Man at Best Buy, you get something that you wouldn't get if you bought it from some other store. And I think, again, this is the retailers trying to stay a little bit ahead of the game and realizing that they are going to go out of business if they don't find, you know, exclusive reasons for you to buy, you know, from retail.
Mm-hmm.
I should also mention with the Fallout one, the Fallout one does have the two tiers of special
edition. Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Is the lunchbox the top one?
No, that's actually the middle one. That's the collector's edition. Then there's the survival edition that comes with the Pip-Boy. The lunchbox one also comes with a plastic bobblehead guy.
Yeah, Halo 3 was the first to do it, I think. They had a regular edition, they had a special edition, and then they had a legendary edition, which was like the big box that came with, you know, like the Master Chief helmet. Right.
Yes, otherwise known as the Cat Space helmet. Yeah,
they still need to really kind of put a little bit more effort into those things though, because a lot of them do come out pretty cheap. I know BioShock, the Big Daddy that came with it, like it broke a lot, and then the Brothers in Arms Hills Highway Collector's Edition came with like a really kind of crappy action figure, you know, put in like a little bit more effort, and I think people will be happier.
The other problem with these special editions is, you know, you can't just put them on the shelf the way that you would stack, you know, regular games. I've got the Blade Runner Blu-ray special edition that comes in the little briefcase with all the goodies, and I can't just put that on my shelf. You know, I've got a few special edition things now, and I've had to set aside like a special shelf that's just for my special editions. And I guess it's good if you're the kind of person that likes that stuff and wants to show them off, you know. But, you know, really the idea of like a big pile of games on a shelf, I think a few years from now, we'll all be telling our kids, like, you know, and this is how we used to do it. And they went, what, you like plastic discs that you had to keep on a shelf? This is mad.
And yeah, they'll be all carrying it. Yeah, they'll be carrying it on a terabyte drive in their pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys. I'm going to be buried with my Pip-Boy for sure. All right. Just to wrap up our news, I don't really have a proper segue for this, but as someone that's especially fond of androgynous robots, I was excited to hear that. Yes, that's right. I was excited to hear that Square Enix will be publishing Supreme Commander 2, apparently.
Yes. I was also quite excited by that news. I mean, I was very surprised that Square Enix would be publishing it. Because, I mean, they've published, I guess, a couple of Final Fantasy games that come out on PC, but I think that's all they've really published. And that's, like, all their own internal stuff. This is apparently their foray into publishing, you know, external stuff from Western developers. So, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll go the extra mile, which I'm all for. And, I mean, it does seem like an odd choice for them because, you know, Supreme Commander was kind of a niche game. You know, PC gamers love it. A lot of them do anyway. Because it was anyway a PC exclusive, but I figured the reason they probably went for it is the Japanese do love their giant robots.
I'd be worried about it though. I mean, look what happened with Flagship and Namco. That didn't work out too well. I'd be very worried if a big Japanese publisher wanted to publish my game because it doesn't seem like a market they understand very well or have much interest in.
Yeah, I'm shocked that THQ let it go. They are kind of specialize in strategy, I guess you could say. I mean, they have Dawn of War.
They own Relic, so they've got their own in-house guys. So maybe the arrangement just didn't work out as well as they would have liked it to.
Sure,
but I didn't realize that Gas Power had actually owned the rights to Supreme Commander. I thought THQ probably had that, but I guess not. So good for them. I hope it does well, and I hope they have, you know, taken a lot of the feedback to heart and come up with some ways to make it a little better. I mean, the one thing that I hope they really nail in this one is that there's no information on this at all. It's just that it exists is this entire announcement. But I hope that the main thing they do is improve the sense of scale, because it was really hard to get it into your head that these are giant robots and not ants, because you do spend so much time zoomed out that, you know, you're just seeing, especially the tier one units just look so tiny. Even when you zoom in, they don't look huge because the environments, like the cities they had in that the robots are supposed to be stomping around in are so kind of SimCity-ish. And, you know, I think just if they make the scale, you get a better sense of scale is all I'm asking for. Yeah. Just put a little more time into the trees and the mountains, and, you know, get better sense of elevation, so we can see what's taller than what. I think that would help it a lot.
Absolutely. Also, if Square is listening, if you guys want to get Nobuo Uematsu to do the soundtrack at all, I'm totally okay with that. Yeah, there's one question from a guy called Marco Ferraris. He asked about Left 4 Dead, and I want to talk about the beta a little bit if we can.
I like its name. Let it roll.
I'm tired of it not being the full game.
Comes out on the 19th.
Okay, good. I'm very excited.
As well you should be.
Has anyone tried using the cheats or whatever where you can play as the zombie side or play custom maps?
They patched it out.
Now, this is the thing that I'm confused about, that I still don't know what the answer is, because when I came out of the demo, when you log out, it does the thing where it says, you know, get the full game and you'll be able to do this, this, and this. One of the things it seemed like it was hinting towards was being able to play as kind of a dungeon master, where I'm kind of like watching you go through the game and I can go, and I will turn off the lights now and freak you out and I will unleash some zombies here. Like, I want to do that. Is the game going to let me do that?
No.
Yeah, I thought that's what the zombies' kind of role was, that they'd be controlling.
They should do that.
They do not.
Well, look at the text when the demo ends, because it says something about you can be the AI director, and that's what I want to do.
I think it was just saying that the AI director changes it each time to give you a unique play experience each time. Because I read that too the same way, and I initially was like, awesome. But then I went through it a couple more times, and it kind of
I was speaking to someone at the Warcraft launch last night who said that playing as the zombies sucks.
They are
not
wrong.
As good as you think.
They are incorrect, sir.
I'm going to roll a question.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. This is Marco Ferraris from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Quick question, because I'm curious. The Left 4 Dead demo has a limited time in which you can play it, and I guess by the time you play this question, if you play this question, it'll be expired because the real deal will be out. Just why do developers do that? Like, is it just so if you want to keep playing, you have to buy the full game? Or maybe it's the servers, because there has to be a lot for the game. So I don't know your thoughts. I'm really curious as to why they do that to me. Anyway, keep it up. It's sweet.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much why, is they want you to buy it.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Right. And we did talk about this a little bit last week, and it is kind of an interesting strategy that I don't think we've really seen that much before, that where they actually yank the demo after the game comes out, which will be another 6 days. So you've got a little more time on that demo. In fact, it just went live to the general populace rather than just the pre-order buyers. But yeah, you can buy the game and keep playing. That's their whole strategy.
I actually really like this idea, because if it's used more in the future, they can make the demos better or less limited, because it's limited by time. So they don't have to worry like, oh, well, if they keep the demo forever, they'll never buy the game. They can give you an awesome, full experience demo and then just cut it short.
The reason I don't like it, though, is that say somebody was or hadn't heard of Left 4 Dead until 3 weeks from now. They don't get to try before they buy. Yeah, that to me is a major drawback to this. I mean, they seem to be counting a lot on word of mouth, which they'll get.
I don't know if that's entirely true. I mean, there's a big, actually, I think probably the biggest marketing push that Valve has ever done. You know, I see Left 4 Dead billboards all over the place.
Oh yeah, it's a $10 million
TV ads. I mean, they are really pushing it.
Yeah, it's a $10 million ad campaign.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, they're relying on that. They're relying on forms of advertising that do not involve trying before you buy, which is kind of unusual. I know for developers that actually take the time to produce a demo.
I think it's only going to work on games that are so well known and obviously such high quality.
I mean, it's conceivable in the future, though, if they do start rolling out DLC or something at that stage, that they'll do like free weekends like Team Fortress does.
Yeah.
You know, that seems like something that'll work. Let's do some playlists, and I'll just take a look at Skype and don't go down the list. Andy Bauman, you're at the top alphabetically.
So, all I've been playing really is the Left 4 Dead demo and Fallout 3, and the limited gaming time that I am afforded by my busy life. And they're both phenomenal, and I couldn't be more excited about all the games that I have yet to play that I haven't played yet. Exactly. Fallout 3.
What level are you at in Fallout now?
I think I'm still level 6 or 7. I think 7.
Oh, you got a ways to go.
Yeah. I hit sort of a wall. Like, I was trying to find the GNR building plaza, and I couldn't find it for the life of me.
Just use the map. The arrows on your compass will guide you to anything. If that's a little vague, you can go into the map and the either the local map or the wide area map.
Yeah.
We'll show you how to get there.
It seems like it's blocked off, though, by rubble.
You have to use the subways.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, and I didn't really want to go down there. I didn't have enough gear yet.
So. It's not too bad in there. You'll be fine.
I love Rivet City, though, because it reminds me of that city in Fallout 2. Homage, almost.
The city in San Francisco, actually, right?
Yeah.
It was
It was like off the boat, and then that's the boat you take to get to the Enclave.
Right.
Spoiler alert.
If you haven't played Fallout 2.
Anyway.
All right, Andy Salisbury.
For a while was trying to...
Well, we already know, but yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, but it was it crashed on me, and then I played Call of Duty World at War for about a day until, guess what, Wrath came out. So I am foreseeing that I'll be dead to the world for a while. I finished enough homework to get ahead by 2 whole weeks. So
nice.
I could dedicate as much time as I could to this.
What did you think of Call of Duty?
I actually really, it's weird because one of my friends had pointed this out and I initially didn't realize it or really see it, but it feels like everything is much slower. Like the character's just being weighed down by, you know, like a 1,000-pound backpack. But the zombie mode is actually a lot of fun. It's no Left 4 Dead, but you know, they're two entirely different games, so I feel bad comparing them like that. But I don't know, overall I'd say it's pretty fun. The co-op is definitely nice.
All right, one more Wrath question for you, Andy. Are you leveling up your Rogue or Shaman first?
Definitely my Rogue.
Nice. Good answer.
Because the other rogues, one of them was the guild officer or the guild master. He quit the game, and the other one was the rogue officer, and he switched to a death knight. So they were like, "Be a rogue officer," and I was like, "Awesome!" So
good luck with that, my friend.
And then what?
Internet politics, go!
Yeah.
All right, Dan. I saw you playing Fallout last night. Is that pretty much what you're up to?
Yeah, I guess you can watch. You can see that I'm playing Fallout on both Steam and Games for Windows. I think I'm gonna give Fallout a break for a while. I just finished my second playthrough. So that's that, I went through without duplicating. Maybe like a couple quests I duplicated, but I tried to go divergent paths and barely saw any of the same stuff twice. But with the new patch that finally came out, it's actually crashing on me more. I'm gonna put it aside, wait for another patch that will hopefully fix my crashing, and I'm gonna spend some time, I think, with Far Cry 2 and Call of Duty World at War, and of course Left 4 Dead.
Wonderful. As for myself, I've been mostly playing the Left 4 Dead demo. I've been traveling a lot since the weekend, but I'm planning on jumping into Far Cry 2 tonight, which I'm really looking forward to. I just kind of switched off my enthusiasm about it so I could conserve it when I was ready to play it, and just looking forward to it, I guess. And Gary, how about yourself?
I got to tell you, it's just mad right now how many good games there are. It's unfair. They really, I understand that holiday, you know, Christmas sales and everything, but they really need to spread these things out more because, you know, it sounds like a silly thing to complain about, but you really can't have too much of a good thing. There's a big embarrassment of riches right now going on with games. I've got a big backlog. I think here's what my plan is, because let's see, what have I been playing? Fable 2, I just got done with. Gears of War 2, still playing that. The online mode is awesome. I've still got Little Big Planet. Mirror's Edge, Left 4 Dead, you know, Lich King. I'm creating a new guild for leveling up in Lich King. That's going to, you know, obviously suck up a bunch of time. Here's what I'm going to do, because I hear that Fallout 3 is like, you know, the longest game, you know, to be done with. So I'm basically going to save that, I think, for after the holidays. You know, there isn't any rule that says, you know, you've got to play all these games the minute they come out. So I've got a bunch of other games to play. Fallout 3, everyone tells me it's great. I'm going to get into it, but I'm basically kind of keeping it, I'm saving it for like after Christmas when there aren't any good games coming out, you know, for a couple of months, and I'll just have that to tide me over. So that's my plan.
Gaz is like a game squirrel. He's burying the nuts in his yard for later.
I am. I'm hoarding my nuts. I'm hoarding my gaming nuts for the long dark winter ahead.
It's really good policy though. Like for everybody should move at their own pace. I mean, there's sort of something about getting caught up in the enthusiasm, like the week after a game launches, and like everybody's talking about exchanging stories at the same time. You're kind of concurrent with your friends, but you should really just move at a pace that allows you to.
I really don't think there's been a better time to be into gaming. I can't remember a time when there's been so much awesome stuff all at the same time. It's just great.
No, guys, I'm actually taking the gaming grizzly bear approach, where I build up a bunch of gaming fat all at once, and then I hibernate.
I was thinking something more like a camel, personally.
There you go.
Depending on where you live.
Oh, metaphors.
That reminds me, though, I have been playing Little Big Planet as well. I didn't know we were allowed to talk about console games.
Not too much.
You will be
slow down. Not on his birthday.
I think everything that I mentioned is either out on PC or coming out on PC.
Eventually. Well, except for LBP.
Well, yeah, obviously not that. But, you know, and, Gears, I'm sure, will get a Games for Windows version at some point. Fable 2, you know, the original ones did, so
yeah.
I'm sure that will as well. Is Mirror's Edge on PC?
Yes.
Next year, yeah. Next year.
Early next year.
It's that far away? Damn it.
Yeah. Early next.
I've still got to make a... And I know that this is not going to be a popular topic here, but I've still got to decide if I want to play Fallout 3 on PC or 360, because I went and bought the game on 360 before I realized that it was on Steam, and because I have a Steam Press account, I basically have now both versions, and I've got to figure out what, if I want to do the really high-res, really cool, you know, PC version, or if I want to do the whole couch, 61-inch TV, not as good graphics experience. I don't know yet.
It actually
I've heard the PC version is a bit crashy as well, so that's kind of putting me off.
Well, it can be and it isn't. I mean, like, Josh just played all the way through and had not one single crash, whereas I have crashes every few minutes with this new patch.
I can't
so,
play.
Yeah. What's that?
The main version for PC on Oblivion seemed to be modding, but I don't really care about that, and apparently they're not even doing it on Fallout 3, so that's kind of a strike against it.
They haven't yet. They probably will. They haven't been willing to commit to anything, they probably will.
All right, moving along. Mr. Decker, are you still embedded in Tomb Raider Underworld?
No, I finished that, and now finally I'm on Far Cry 2, which is a wonderful experience.
Oh, excellent. So we'll be playing that at the same time. Cool. Excellent. And Josh Augustine, I saw you playing World of Goo a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We're just talking about how many great games there are right now, but I just got my Steam Press account, so I kind of have access to all these games like during the past years that I wanted to play, but you know, I was poor in college, I couldn't afford it. So I'm going back, I started playing the Sam & Max games, which are awesome. I'm playing through the first one right now. I'm a big fan of the old kind of point-and-click adventure games, LucasArts and stuff, so it's great to see it with like new polish, because I probably play the Monkey Island games at least once a year. So it's nice to actually have one that's kind of up to date. And
check those games out.
Yeah, it's really good. The first one, it's just so, it's clever. And I was worried, like, because I haven't played adventure games in a few years, other than the Monkey Island ones. Like, I thought maybe I had lost my edge and I just get lost kind of walking around, unsure what to click. But it's really intuitive. It's really good. But yeah, excellent. World of Goo, I'm not a big fan of.
Really?
It's, yeah. Like, I love Peggle. And I was talking about this with Logan last night. Okay. Yeah, we were talking about it last night. And, you know, it's missing the same spark, I think, that Peggle has. It's missing something.
I know what I heard that they're going to release a patch for World of Goo that turns all their little, like, sounds into swear words.
If you pre-ordered it, you could get that.
Oh.
I don't know if it's still available.
I'm thinking that's what it's missing. That's so
obscenity.
Yes.
We'll hey, see. Is GTA 4 coming out on PC soon? I see it here on this Games for Windows page.
Next month.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. Soon. I played it a lot on Xbox, but I might go back and play it because that's a game that really does look good in the higher res on PC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're certainly looking forward to it. All right, well, as this super-sized podcast topples to the ground, we roll for the loot it leaves behind, equipping ourselves with the green and purple remnants in preparation for next week. But in the 168-hour absence of our crack team of PC gaming experts, we encourage you to submit questions for our upcoming episodes. Drop us an MP3 at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com or call us toll-free at 877-404-LEET, extension 724, and record your question there. And remember to keep it brief. We'd also welcome your support by subscribing to PC Gamer Magazine. Just head over to gamesradar.com/PC and direct your eyes to the left column of the page for the subscribe link. With thanks to our supersized PC Gamer podcast crew today, we'll leave you with some interview excerpts we gathered at the Lich King launch event in San Francisco last night.
Doing? My name's Logan. Just what's your name?
I'm Gary.
I'm from PC Gamer.
All right.
You read PC Gamer?
Yeah, sure do.
Boy, man of taste. Give him a t-shirt. Who cares if he gets the questions right?
Awesome.
Right? I mean,
geez. The first one, right?
Yeah, so you answered.
Did people answer incorrectly or what?
You know what?
I'm surprised.
What's worse are the people who answer correctly and are smug about it.
Of course I do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. So you mind if we ask you some trivia questions? We'll see how much you know about World of Warcraft.
Sure.
You're feeling confident?
Oh.
All right.
Yeah,
nice.
So.
Very well. How about, should we give them the hard ones or the easy ones?
Easy ones.
Let's start easy.
Yeah, let's, you know, progressively.
How many talent points does a level 70 character have?
60.
Close.
Hank. 61. Very close. Very nicely done, though.
Okay.
What stat can almost exclusively be found on PvP gear only?
Resilience.
Oh, Nice. Oh, I almost want to give him another t-shirt for that one, you know.
Come on.
How long you been waiting here?
About 30 minutes.
Are you gonna go straight home and play?
I think so, yes.
Nice. And how long are you going to stay up?
I have to go to work tomorrow, so probably a few hours.
Yeah. What time do you have to get up?
At 8.
Few hours, let's see, it's what?
I got to be at work at 9. Yeah.
Few hours, 11:30.
Right.
It's still pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
If you include breakfast and showering and all that.
Yeah.
Have you ever, you know, like poop socked?
Do what?
Have you ever heard of poop socking?
No.
Oh, that's when you, like, you don't want to get up and you use this. You've never done that.
If I gotta go, I gotta go.
You gotta go. Right. All right.
I'm casually hardcore. I'm casually hardcore.
Thank you very much. So. We'll have a good night.
All right. Nice meeting you. Thank you.
Hi. We were just drawn to your Morlock hat, look at that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
she is a Morlock.
Oh.
Dang.
Wow, impressive. What's your name?
Kitty.
Hi, Kitty. My name's Logan. I'm from PC Gamer. You read PC Gamer?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, all right. We like give her a t-shirt. Yeah, right? Are you going to go straight home and play?
Yeah, we're not even sure we're going to sleep, actually.
Whoa. You're not just no work tomorrow? Nothing
We all took the day off.
Well done. All right. So how long do you think you can keep going?
Probably till like tomorrow night, but then we have to work on Friday, so you got to sleep sometime.
That's pretty harsh. Have you ever, you know, like poop socked? Did that whole thing?
Do what now?
You know what poop socking is?
I don't want to know.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like when you don't want to get up, you just can't.
I don't need to hear.
Oh.
All right. So, I mean, does it get that bad ever?
No, it's never gotten that bad.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to think about it.
Because remember, the podcast listeners don't necessarily know which kitty in the world it is.
It's never gotten that bad.
You're kind of covered. All right.
No, it's never gotten that bad.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
But let's say it got that bad, would you seek help or would you be okay with it?
We'd probably all just sit around and laugh about it.
It is pretty funny.
Yeah. we're moving.
Remember, honey, back when we poop talk. Thank you very much. Have a good night. You look like a respectable gentleman. Hi, my name's Logan Decker from PC Gamer. You want a t-shirt?
Sure.
Sure. Will you answer a few questions first?
I can try.
Fantastic. Actually, will you let me tell you a knock-knock joke?
Yeah.
That'll be awesome. Okay. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
The Gestapo.
The Gestapo.
I am
who?
Asking the questions here.
Ask away.
You didn't think it was funny, man. But give him a t-shirt. Let's move on, man. This is hurtful. How long have you guys been waiting here?
I've been waiting here about half an hour, 45 minutes.
And then are you gonna make a beeline, go home, and play?
No, I'm not. I know some people are. I'm not.
So your name is?
My name is Raymond.
Raymond, his shtick is clearly like Mr. Unflappable, right?
Huh? Well, I don't have a computer to play on it, so.
Oh, that's pretty harsh.
Yeah. At midnight, find the game.
For the experience? Okay. To have fun?
All right. So Raymond likes experiences.
He heard about the free t-shirts.
I did.
And hallucinogenics, all that kind of thing?
I should have taken some hallucinogenics. This would be a lot more fun.
Yeah, wouldn't it? But you never know when things are going to go bad on that kind of thing.
I could have a bad evening starting real quick.
All right. Thank you very much, Ray.
Yeah, thank you.
You're going to go right home and play?
Yes.
Awesome.
Right away. James.
Hi, James. I'm Logan from PC Gamer, the magazine you don't read, hopefully.
I actually used to have a subscription, but it's pricey.
Well, now you know we're here.
Now I spend everything on World of Warcraft.
Everything we do for you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it very much.
So you're going to go right home and play. How long do you think you can play before you're
going to... I'm going to play for 32 hours, probably, straight.
Dude, you got this mapped out.
Pretty much.
What's happening in 32 hours that is making you stop?
Is it the apocalypse?
No. It's just because I won't be able to play after that for like 4 days, something like that.
Wow. All right.
Busy work and stuff.
You can do that, 32 hours straight.
Yeah.
What about the meals, anything like that? You worried about that?
You know, the little breaks. You gotta give in. Yeah.
You know poop? You ever heard of poop sock?
No.
Yeah, well, that's when like you don't want to get up because, you know, it's just, you don't want to interrupt everything, so you just take care of business right there. Does it ever get that bad?
No.
All right.
No.
All right.
No, I mean, I have my limits.
Oh, sure. No, that's fantastic.
Fully human. Or blood elf, whatever.
Who would win, sand gnomes versus Murlocs?
Sand gnomes.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
The Gestapo.
The Gestapo.
I'm asking the questions here.
Got it.
I don't get it. I thought it was a chuckle. A chuckle.
Good man.
I'm getting nothing
from people down that way. Have you heard of poop talking?
No.
All right, because it's like when you don't want to get up because, you know, you've been playing for a long time, but you don't want to, yeah, so you just take the poop. Does it ever get that bad?
No.
No, okay.
No, I have two kids. I get to play for, like, they go to bed around 9,
so
I get, like, 3 hours. Nice. 9 to midnight.
You set a good example.
Yeah. When my girl's not bitching at me.
What's your name?
Eric.
Eric, how you doing, Eric?
Doing good, man. All right, let's see here.
You ever read PC Gamer?
What's that?
You ever read PC Gamer?
I used it a long time ago.
Should we give him a t-shirt? What was that?
That's
a great cultural document,
I don't do any more magazine things anymore. I just don't.
You're either with us or you're against us.
I didn't even Playboy. I didn't even do anymore. I used to be...
That was a good save.
I used to do Nintendo Power. I was PC Gamer. I had other stuff, too. And then I was like, I'm done with these magazines. I'm just...
Yeah.
I don't need them. I have reviews from my friends and the internet.
I've had relationships like that. Yeah. Just like, I'm done with it. Never doing that again. Yeah.
You're out. I'm sorry. Game over.
Yeah. You ever heard of poop sucking?
What?
Poop sucking.
Uh-uh.
That's when, like, you don't want to get up because you've been playing, even though you've been playing for a long time.
Oh, yeah, well.
And so you just deal with the situation there, you know, with the sock.
Sorry. Now I got you. Oh, yeah, a couple times. Yeah, of course.
All right, cool.
I'm a man. I can't deny that. Yeah.
This is honest. That's candor.
What can't...
On a level that we haven't encountered yet tonight.
We got a lot of
people going like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. But we know that they know what we're talking about, right?
I've been hearing that joke I've been told many things about it from my father and his father.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been passed down.
Yeah. How many years have you been playing WoW?
4 years?
Since release.
No, was it 4 years it was released? I started a year after it was released because I was playing, what was I playing before that? I was playing Star Wars Galaxies, that's right.
When's the first person going to hit level 80, do you think?
Oh, dude. What was it? When Burning Crusades came out, the guy on our server got hit 70 by day 3 or day 4. Me, I'll probably give it a couple of weeks. I'm not gonna burn through it. I gotta enjoy it.
Sure.
I'm at that point where, like, I'm ready to quit, or this better be more worth it. But hopefully, so I'm gonna deal with it and try to get as much as I can. So.
Plus, you only have so many socks.
That's true. Actually, I just bought some new socks, so they're ready to go.
In this economy, you know, yeah. you gotta make them last.
Hey, I learned how to knit too, so it's all good.
Can we have one more riff before we go?
I'll do a little tune. Sure.
Very nice. Thank you very much.
Just
enjoy the game.
Thanks,
Lana.
I hate you.
Cocky Cemetery.
Okay, I'm sorry, your name again?
Patrick.
All right, Patrick.
Tier 6 Raider.
Yes.
Tier 6 Raider. Okay. Well, he's looking real smug, so let's just throw a couple questions at him. What stat can be exclusively found, almost exclusively, on PvP gear only?
Resilience.
Wow.
Throw him a hard one.
You can't see it, but he didn't even blink. That was a little creepy, I have to say. Which two classes get a free land mount?
Paladins and Warlocks.
This is unearthly. All right.
Toss him.
All right.
Did you raid Old World?
Everybody, hold on a second. We need to confer.
I'm sorry, what was that? What?
See, he raided Old World. See if he can do that.
Okay, we're taking right. Patrick down. That's what's going on right now.
Yeah, this one. Second one.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, dang.
Put these raid dungeons in the order of progression. Oh, I can't even do that one. That's horrible. Look at that.
Dude, he raided Old World.
All right. Blackwing Lair, next Ramos, Molten Core, and Temple of...
Encourage.
All right.
Molten Core, Blackwing Lair, Nox. Well, Temple of Encourage, then Naxxramas. It flip flops.
Holy, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. My God. Could anyone else here have done that?
I probably could.
I don't think I could. No.
Wow. That was extraordinary.